following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
LifeLock 2019 data breach of MGM Resorts impacted more than 142 million hotel guests. That's right, the hackers took the data, put it for sale on the dark web. Cybercrime marketplace, man. It's going for $2,900. That could be your information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. Put our info on the internet, and you're out there. Now, look, it's convenient. It's great. You're ordering things. You're ordering food. You're taking care of business. You're doing it all from the comfort and safety of your own home, but your info is out there. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Hello and welcome back to Corolla Classics for August 8th, 2020. We're going over the history of the Adam Carolla Show, and we're taking you there via some nice clips. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show, and with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. We're back again with another episode for you to give to your friends so Adam will talk about the ratings when he means download numbers.
Yeah, either way, we know what he means.
Well, some people are like, ratings, iTunes ratings? Was he talking about Apple Podcast ratings? No, no, he means the actual total numbers for people who download the show.
Right.
There's no Nielsen's for podcast. There probably is, but we don't need them.
All right. Now, we've been playing you guys the history of the show from the first year all the way to the News Girl change. And now we're going to February of 2014, when Adam did a live podcast from Park West Theater in Chicago, and Gio was actually there.
I was indeed. Mike Lawrence was the guest. It's Adam Carolla Show 1252, Allison Rose and Brian Bishop. Park West is one of the most important venues for Adam's podcast and stand-up career. And the things that have happened there are just hilarious. And this was one of the funniest shows he ever did. Mike Lawrence was a really nice dude. He was promoting his album Sadamantium at the time, which I, of course, was in love with because of Marvel Comics references. He came on stage and they crushed it. Check it out.
What else? Oh, so my flight was delayed out of Detroit today. Which then meant it was a great move because as we were getting out of the casino mobile, casinos all have a mobile that will drop you anywhere the fuck you want to go. They make money and they will pick you up and then take your money and then drop your shit off without charging you. But as we were getting out of the SUV that the casino provided for us, as I set foot in front of the airport, my phone rang, and it was my assistant, Matt, the porcelain punisher, Fondelier, who said, "Boss, I just got an email from the airline. Your flight has been delayed." And I thought, that's fine, as I see the SUV drive away. So,
boom.
Yeah. I wrote down the delayed times because I always say it every time. Every motherfucking time they do that thing where they go, your flight has been delayed 20 minutes or 40 minutes. Always in bite-sized morsels. It's never that. Meaning, if we tell you your flight's delayed 3 hours, you'll start burning down the airport. Yeah. But if we just give it to you in 20-minute increments...
String you along.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you get into day three of 20-minute increments. You know, someone will go, well, shit, 18 minutes from now, we're going to be on that plane.
The person I always love in that situation... Because I never have the confidence. There's always that one guy that sends up and goes, "What is the meaning of this?"
Yeah.
I fucking love that. I lived through that guy. I
flew out of New York. A guy wanted to start a mutiny. He literally is like, "Come on, we got rights.
They can't stop all of us."
To do what? Be pepper sprayed and stay in New York for another 3 days? Sit the fuck down. We have rights. He really wanted, I think he just wanted a fucking voucher. Everyone just wants a $100 voucher. But he went down, everyone in line, and did the, you know. It's so weird. A couple things. So here's what we got. It was a 1:30 flight, a 1:35 flight. It got kicked back to 220, then 315, and then eventually we left at 410. That's how it worked, and I was supposed to beat the Binnies at 5:30 to sign a Mangria bottle, so it didn't work out that good. Thank goodness we made our way into the Lufthansa bar and grill and lounge and oven.
Thank God.
Yeah, yeah. Got this one, too. Had the perky cunt behind the counter who did the... I have, by the way, I don't know what cards work at the airport anymore because everyone is an affiliate and been bought by and taken over and a branch of and a whatever. So you go, is there a United Lounge? And they go, no, there's no United Lounge. And you go, oh, fuck. And they go, but Lufthansa takes United whatever. And you go, oh, okay. And then you go over there and you start pulling shit out. And they're like, nope, nope, no, we, Costco, no, that doesn't, no. No, AMPM, no, there's no, not, pictures of your kids are nice, but no, we don't. You just keep pulling shit out. Eventually, I got my United thing out, and she's like, well, this is expired. And I said, all right. And she said, I'm going to let you go. She said, I'm going to let you go.
Wow.
Just this one time. And I just thought, what the fuck? I mean, listen. Let me go or don't let me go, but don't do that thing where you're a hero. You know what I mean? Where you stand in between me and happiness. You're the gatekeeper.
Because otherwise you'd be there every single day trying this.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Right. That's the other thing. Like, but just this once. Oh, shit, we're going to come back to the Lufthansa hospitality tent every fucking Monday in Detroit for the next 6 years. I was thinking about shitting in here. What's, whoa, just this once? I got to make a phone call, quick. I got relatives coming out here. Like, yes, it will be just this once. And by the way, when your airline fucks up enough to fuck up the flight for 2 hours, we should all get to be able to drink Miller Lite and relax back there with some... some super disappointing wraps. By the way, who needed wraps? I got the turkey wrap. The turkey cheese wrap.
The ratio is never right. There's always too much wrap, too little meat, and something green.
And they went with the whole wheat flour, the whole wheat tortilla thing. And
I just imagine sandwiches looking at wraps and going, fucking kids these days.
Yeah.
Like, sandwiches must be so pissed off.
You see, like, when a Reuben or Monte Cristo or...
they're all talking shit.
They're talking shit.
These fucking paninis, they leave Italy. They come to our country and take our jobs. Yeah. I'm a panini. I'm a delicious. Fuck you.
At a certain point, like, the club sandwich gets drunk and pulls out its toothpick. Yeah. On guard. Come on. Let's go. Throw down, and the other sandwiches have to gather around. Like, come on, there's four of him or three of him. He's pissed off because he's pie-shaped. Don't just back off.
Every day I wake up, I look at, like, pretzel bread. I'm like, whose agent does that guy have? Because he's fucking everywhere.
Nicole Richie's agent.
Yeah. The thing, I've said this once, I've said it 1,000 times. The whole thing about the pretzel is the shape. Once you turn it into a straight line, you're no longer necessary. If I can be violated with a pretzel, it's no good to me.
Mm.
The pretzel, and then again, it's like, it's no good because pro wrestlers can't go, I'm going to take you and bend you into the shape of a pretzel. Not the sticks, not the pretzel bread, not the pretzel bun, but the old-fashioned ones that look like... That looked like the highfalutin Ann's.
Yes.
Yes. All right. The General Mills G or something like that.
Pretzel bread just looks like regular bread that was at a tanning salon too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like those like old like leathery looking women in their 50s. Like that's what pretzel bread looked like. It has like that cigarette voice.
Yo, I wonder if the...
I used to live in the old Bavarian country. Me and my pal Salted Caramel, we've been doing good for ourselves.
Just pretzel bread says toots all the time for no reason.
Pretzel bread is Joey's agent on Friends.
Yes.
For anyone who watches Friends.
I'm so glad I don't get that reference.
That is, no, I got it. It's an old, wrinkled, tan Jewish broad, right?
Yeah.
It's, yes. It's
Estelle.
Estelle, right. I wonder if there's ever a throwdown between the miniature pretzels that are shaped like a pretzel and then the full-size pretzel bread. Like, they're both laughing at each other. You feel sorry for me, dude. I feel sorry for you. Look how straight you are. Hey, at least I'm in the shape of a fucking pretzel, dude. At least I'm keeping the dream alive.
I think pretzel bread is the mom that doesn't talk to the little pretzels anymore. Mm. You know, you never visit me. I'm in Boca. Come on.
She went out to Florida, and her kids have cut off all contact with her. All right, we have some totally topical TiVo trivia, and we have a Chicago edition. This is just the description that comes up on TiVo when a movie comes up, but minus the actors and talent in the movie, yes? All right, Dawson. Oh, wait, what's my name?
Pete.
My name's Pete. Okay, sorry. You shout out your name. Adam's too soft. I've been burned enough. Okay. So I shout out Pete, but use your name when you think you know the answer. Sorry.
Let's play Totally Topical TiVo Trivia Time today.
Two brothers fight each other and an outbreak of arson. As
Brian.
Brian.
Oh, shit. Is this Backdraft?
From 1991.
Shit. Hold on. Let me say this. I don't like it when they make movies about either cops or firemen, which make them insane heroes, like where they go, like, that warehouse is totally engulfed in flames. And the guy goes, there may be someone still in there. And I don't care what color their skin is, I'm going in. And they grab a door and they make it into a shield and they just start pushing forward. And another guy goes, I'm right behind you. And they do this incredible thing. And then they talk to real firemen. They go, did you see Backdraft? Was it realistic? Absolutely. very realistic. Very realistic. If they made a movie about me where my cock was really wide and then I had like shredded abs and then they went to me and went, was it pretty realistic? Absolutely. 100%. That's
if anything,
kind of, documentary.
If anything, they dialed it back just to make it more
believable.
Yeah, they
dialed it just to make it. It was unbelievably, so unbelievably wide. Plus, on the IMAX format, it wouldn't fit. So, so we had
but
to scale
it works
it back.
In 3D for some reason. Yeah. It's just poking at you the whole time.
Right. But whenever they do a fucking movie about cops, firemen, or anything that makes them look like insane heroes, it's always, oh, yeah, 100%. All right, Brian's up 1-0. Here we go.
In 2035.
Brian. It's got to be RoboCop.
A Chicago homicide detective
tracks
Pete.
Oh, shit. Blade Runner in Chicago.
Tracks a sophisticated robot.
Mike, iRobot?
From 2004.
That took place in Chicago?
RoboCop was Detroit. That was stupid.
That was Detroit.
That was dumb.
You're on Detroit. I led you down.
So dumb.
No, it was me talking about shitting in Detroit.
No, I was talking about you. So dumb.
Oh, sorry.
I'm so pissed about
PG. iRobot took place in Chicago?
iRobot was a movie?
It's a movie, yeah. It's also a vanity plate I had in the 80s.
It turns out
I could dance, you know. I'm just want to let people know.
2004 Vancouver looks exactly like 2035
that's
Chicago.
Right. That's true.
To help a friend, a suburban babysitter.
Brian. Oh, fuck. Uncle Buck?
Adventures in Babysitting?
From 1987, Adventures in Babysitting.
I don't know if that movie holds up, but I liked it at the time.
Me too.
Yeah. All right, Mike, kicking
first
in.
Appearance of Thor. She has
Speaking of vanity plates, so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. The underpaid Chicago White Sox.
Eight men out.
Brian. Pete. Brewster's Millions.
Mike, eight men out.
From 1988,
wow.
It is eight men out.
Brian, you may have met your match.
Uphill battle.
For the first time, I'm glad I don't have friends.
Mike.
See? It's paid dividends.
Mike, to chime in, say your name.
Oh, sorry.
Not the title of film, please.
Ooh, oh, wow.
Should I just Heisenberg you? That is my name.
Unjustly Accused.
Brian.
Brian.
The Fugitive.
From 1993.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It's 3-2.
Wow.
Mike's in the lead. A record store owner.
Brian.
Pete. Brian.
High Fidelity.
From 2000.
Wow. See, that's why he's the king. What do we not? Is it 3-3 now?
Knotted up at 3.
If I lose, I have to shave my beard and glue it to his head. So.
I'm in.
Heading to Chicago to see a boxing match.
Pete.
Oh,
Digstown?
A group of friends.
I thought you said Dickstown, like Dick's, the pornographic version of Dickstown.
Dickstown? That's another license plate. That's a frame. I couldn't get that one passed by.
Mine was iDicks.
Yeah.
A group of friends witness a murder.
Ah, shit. I worked on this fucking film.
And have to run from a gang.
Pete again. Repeat.
Pete.
Judgment Day. No, Judgment Night.
Judgment Night from 1993.
Well, you know, the problem with that movie
I thought that was L.A. That's...
Well, it was fucking shot in L.A. They did, like, all the B-roll and all that shit in Chicago.
I didn't know. What did you do on the movie?
I was a stand-in for... By the way, when you're a stand-in for a bad guy...
For Cuba?
Were you a snow dog?
No. If you can find the bad guys, I stood in for the dude who was shortish with super long hair in the bad guy crew. And I knew the AD on the movie, and I was broke, and I was swinging a hammer, and I was begging him for any kind of work he would give me. And stand-in work was a cushy gig because you got paid $100 a day and you got to eat as much as you wanted and didn't have to fucking do anything. And the bad guys were like Dennis Leary. And then...
Be Real.
No, it wasn't Be Real. It was...
Someone else from Cypress Hill?
Oh, no. No, it wasn't a Cypress Hill. It was a Jump Around guy. A House of Pain guy.
Everlast?
It was Everlast, yeah. It was Everlast.
Brian, Everlast.
Everlast. Anyway, these guys all looked exactly like the guys they were standing in for because they had to, like, audition and had to go through a vetting process. And you have to be the same height and the same color and the same hair and the same everything, because when they light the scene, they need to light the stand-ins. And I was 5 inches taller and had short hair, and my guy down there.
This story is still more entertaining than the movie.
This story sucks. But I just remember when the first time the director saw me, got everyone together, was like, you stand there. He had me moving. He just looked at me like, who the fuck are... All right. And just, like, moved on. But when you stand in for a bad guy in a shitty movie, you pray that your guy doesn't get killed first. The whole plan is to have your guy go on as long as humanly possible and get as many days and as much free trail mix out of the gig as humanly possible. But yes, I was a stand-in in that movie. Very sad.
You're hoping your guy makes it to the showdown at the end. You're like Carl in Die Hard.
Yeah. I also, by the way, the biggest thrill of my young showbiz career is at the rap party, they gave a T-shirt out that had 752 names on the back of it, and I was like 748. Like a found, hey, that's me. C-O-R. Right there.
I bet.
Right above the caterer and between the guy who cleaned out the porta potty. There I am.
I bet the most frustrating person to stand in for is Danny Trejo, because regardless of who you are, you're like, I look better than that guy.
Yeah.
This is bullshit.
Yeah. Or Edward James Olmos, where you're like, is my skin that bad? Like, what's going on? Am I that
Does
ready?
My face also look like an envelope?
Yeah, do they need like a pockmark stand-in?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Blind lighting. People can read his face.
I'll take my half a point. Thank you. Oh, that must be weird. Like, I wonder if Edward James almost dates a blind chick, because in every movie where you date the blind chick, the chick can tell you're hunky.
Or she's like, I don't know what you're trying to say. He's like, no, I'm not saying anything. It's just my face.
Yeah.
I just imagine that his pockmarks and Morgan Freeman's dimples have conversations together.
Yeah. And by the way, Morgan Freeman's outies and his innies should get together. Like, hey, you got a roller skate. I got a key.
They could have a threesome with Seal.
That is racist, first up. And that's why I love you. I will bet you that if you got Morgan Freeman and Edward James Olmos, their faces would lock together. I bet the pattern is exact.
They match up like Pangea. Like perfect.
Boom.
I believe it is time for us to unite like penguins right now.
That's right. We got to do that. Somebody's got to do that, man.
Someone's probably already done it already.
You're right. That's lame. You're right. All right. 3-3-0 yeah. Half.
A hip Chicago team, Pete.
About last night.
Moves to
a... Shit! I just had that one chambered.
I like that movie.
I know.
Moves to a Midwestern town where... Thanks to a pastor, dancing...
Brian.
Oh.
Oh, it's Footloose.
From 1984.
Yeah. Come on. Allison, come on now.
I know. I should have... I love Kevin Bacon.
Why are we booing?
Because you got a point.
Oh.
No.
Fuck
you.
Yeah.
We're booing. Let me tell you why we're booing.
Get used
Allison
to it.
Right now. That was a guy whose, you know, batting average is like 11, and he just dribbled one back to the pitcher, and you're not running it out. You know what I mean? You're heading for the dugout. You know what I mean? You're better than that. You see what I'm saying? You're not going to win this game. I want to see you leg it out. Do you know what I mean? I want to see that helmet come off. You know what I mean?
Allison has no idea what metaphors you're using.
What I'm saying is...
I don't even know if he's talking to me or you.
You're gonna get out. You're out. What I'm saying is,
what's going on?
You're not getting to first base. But we want to see a hustle. And I felt like that showed a lack of hustle.
Okay, but there's many people at home don't know. But there's many a time I've been like, which is me trying. It wasn't one of them. That's true. But it's me trying to get my name in there.
Oh, okay.
I need to be a P name. I'm going to lose as Priscilla.
It's like there's a part of your brain that's John Lithgow not allowing the rest of it to be free and think for itself.
Yes, I'm repressed.
All right, here we go.
A cool teen plays hooky.
Pete. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
From 1986.
Yeah. One and a half.
A folksy Arkansas dancer turns radio psychologist.
Pete.
Oh, Brian. Oh, fuck.
Okay. How many seconds do I get?
As many as you need, boss.
Okay. Oh, shit. It's Dolly Parton in Straight Talk, Street Talk.
From 1992, Straight Talk.
Straight Talk. Oh, my God. Let me tell you why I hate that fucking movie. Because
you're sitting on a pumpkin in the poster?
There was like 10 years where that was every movie poster pose.
Yeah.
It's a comedy, boy. You're going to laugh.
It had that scene where she came into the radio station and she was applying for the job as like the receptionist, and they did that confusion where the boss went, "You're late. You're going to be on the air in 3 minutes." And she went, "But, huh?" And he went, "Come on over here." Said, "By the way, is there ever a situation like you go to the airport and someone goes, 'You're late. You got to fly this plane,' or where you couldn't stop and go, 'I'm not a pilot. I'm not here for this.' Or we just find yourself behind the yoke, like just doing this 2,000 feet in the fucking air. Like, I feel like you could stop and go, 'That's not what I'm
doing.'" Yeah, there would be a moment.
They sat her down behind the microphone because they thought she was like the, you know, Dr. Ruth or the Dr. something. And she's going to give advice and love advice or whatever. And then she started giving her homespun country advice.
And let me guess, they didn't want any of it.
You're just a regular modern woman who owns her own theme park. This will be right. Fine.
Then it turned into a thing where, of course, the town started going nuts like almost immediately. And then she would be walking past construction sites and they'd be playing it. And she'd go past people waiting for the bus and they'd be holding it up and billboards everywhere. I did radio. None of that shit ever happens. Fucking 5 years in, my dad said, hey, maybe I could come on and be a guest on your show. And I said, all right, when do you want to come on? And he said, I don't know, Friday about 7? And I said, the show's on Sunday through Thursday, and it starts at 10. That's the fucking reality of radio.
You mean you were never walking carrying coffee and a bus went by with your picture on it?
With my picture on it, yeah. Hey, that's me.
Well, they always do the montage where there's like 5 or 6 people listening to the show to show that it's popular. What if like those were the only people listening and that's it?
Well, the montage, they start growing and growing and growing and then people are listening.
Your ratings went from 6 to 8.
All right. Now, wait. What do I have?
3.
2.5 or 3, uh-oh.
Mike has 3, Brian has 4.
Ooh.
Allison has 0.
A you
Chicago
didn't have to
man
say that.
And yeah. His family.
What?
I'll what? Say it again. A Chicago man and his family go camping.
Mike.
Mike.
The Great Outdoors.
From 1988.
Wow.
This is mostly going to be John Hughes movies. He's the best.
Every fucking third movie, too, was this guy's a slick used car salesman, and this guy's a schlubby, and they're forced to be neighbors or live together on a houseboat. Yeah. By the way, since that was that odd couple was the theme of, but I'm assuming the people you hang out with, you know, have bad frames and bad beards, and you guys talk comedy, right? It's not like I'm a Republican RV salesman.
We're all 31-year-olds with backpacks. Yes.
That's right. You tend to kind of hang out with the people you hang out with.
Yeah.
You don't get, and by the way, if your neighbor is someone you hate and would never hang out with, guess who doesn't hang out with the neighbor? But in the movie world, that was every third one. All right, are we 4 and 4 now?
Yes, game is to 5. This
oh
could
my
be
God.
It.
Ooh.
A killer sought by a Chicago detective.
Pete.
Pete.
About last night.
Becomes a doll.
Oh, shit.
Called Chucky.
Oh, come on.
Mike. Brian.
Child's play.
Wait.
I heard Mike first.
Oh, what? I did too. Oh.
Crowd.
Oh, I heard Mike too, but I maybe just sit next to him.
The win from 1988.
Wow,
it is Child's Play. Wow. Congratulations, Mike.
Listen,
that's Lindsay Lohan in her first role.
Brian, I got to say, we might have to go back and listen to the tape on that one. That was a simultaneous answer and name. I heard Mike, too, but I'm
please,
sitting next to him.
Just please in the future refer to me as the people's champion.
Okay, all right.
Tune in for more Totally Topical TiVo Trivia Time tomorrow.
Mike,
Tuesday.
You got a couple more minutes before you got to run and go.
Is my
do your
win
set,
tainted
right?
Or am I good?
No. That's a clean win and a nice win and a man.
He said taint.
Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? Let's get to getting, man. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Save that 15%, and you should be with Geico anyway. You'd be saving already. And then the 15 on top of that at geico.com.
And that was Mike Lawrence on stage from the Park West Theater in Chicago. As Gio said, the Park West has a very important role in the history of the Adam Carolla Show. And most recently, Adam sold it out in earlier this year for Adam Carolla's Unprepared. So even his most recent visit there was a sold-out show, and there's a really cool picture of it, of Adam looking back and all the everybody hanging out behind him. It's on his Instagram. So make sure to see Adam live whenever he gets back on the road. I know we have a show in Tempe scheduled for next month in Arizona, so look out for that if you're in the area. All right, now let's go back into the studio. This is from April of 2014, and we're going to invite Alicia Witt. She's an excellent musician and actress, and she was on with Allison and Brian.
Yeah, best known probably for her work on, most recently, Justified. She was on Sybil for all those years. She was the star of the Urban Legend in 98. She actually appeared on Loveline all the way back to 96 when she was on Sybil. Then she came on again in 98 to promote Urban Legend. And during that episode, Adam had some gas and started farting up the studio. And she had a very specific reaction. And I saw she was coming on the podcast. I was like, I'm gonna remind Adam of that, just to let him know. And then he decided to bring it up on air, and it created some podcast magic, where they reminisce about Loveline with Alicia Witt. Adam Carolla Show 1312. This is from April of 2014. Check it out.
Yeah, everybody. Alicia Witt's here.
Hey.
Good to see you. Justified. One of the many shows. I was Giovanni, super fan Giovanni, emailed me and he said Alicia was on Loveline in 1998.
I remember that.
I can't remember. You're doing a horror movie.
She played a fetus.
Urban Legend.
Urban Legend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she said, he said, Alicia said she liked fart humor, so you farted. And. Said,
did
right.
you fart or did I fart?
He said I farted, and then he said, then you farted again, and then you farted a third time, and then she wasn't laughing. At a certain point.
I've blocked this out of my memory.
I didn't. I did as well, but Giovanni, he brings back memories. Fond and painful.
What's that smell?
That's what I'm talking about. That's right.
I mean, that's risky for you to hear that she likes fart humor and then to fart, because sometimes you get more than you're bargaining for.
And also, that's fart true. Humor isn't always ass-related.
No, it doesn't have to be. It can be all different orifices.
Yeah, or...
Like cerebral fart humor.
Or not. That's right.
High concept. Thinking,
yeah, like you see
down
at Largo.
It's begins with a Q.
Right, and ends with a weef.
Yes, exactly.
So Alicia has been, let's see, Dune 1984 is when you got started, I guess.
That's
you've
right.
been like acting your whole life.
Yes.
What's the story? Where are you coming? Massachusetts?
That's exactly where I'm from. Today? Yes. I'm originally from Worcester, mm-hmm. Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
But I've lived in LA since I was 14.
And you were a good student, smart, bright, just decided acting is what you want to do, or somebody decided that?
I wound up in Dune through the weirdest chain of events. I'd been on a variety show called That's Incredible when I was four.
I remember That's Incredible.
I was on that. I was doing Shakespeare.
When you were four?
Yes.
Now, there was two shows. One of them had like John Davidson and Fran Tarkenton or something like that. And That's Incredible.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of go back to home base. Guy had guy with a beard of bees, and then they'd mm-hmm. go bring in the human interest, and then the guy who was balancing the chair on the Eiffel Tower, and on the go back to some
the
big
contortionist.
Stunt at the end.
There was one who was in a box,
yeah.
and all.
So you could
up.
You could you were reading at age two, right?
Yes.
And see, I read, and then at age four, you're on That's Incredible.
Yes,
doing Shakespeare.
That's true.
Well, wait, so I which was were you that. Doing, though?
I was doing Romeo and Juliet, part of the balcony scene with John Davidson as Romeo.
I didn't get into that until I was like five and a half. So you're way ahead of me.
So
that must have been amazing and insane and surreal
It was
to watch.
Crazy, and it was the first time I had any experience like that, obviously, and I still didn't think I could be an actor. It just wasn't on my radar. And then randomly at four, I mean, it's not like I grew up around any actors or saw any. And then a few years later, the casting director for Dune was watching a repeat of that same episode. And they were looking specifically for a little girl who could say big words, basically, because this character that I played in Dune had been infused with the water of life. Uh-huh. And she was in the womb, and she was supposed to have the knowledge of generations of reverend mothers before her.
Uh-huh. So you had to toss out big words.
Yes.
And out of a young mouth, and they went, that girl, she's four. And
so I went to New York and auditioned for David Lynch and got the part, and that changed my life.
And then you come out here at 14 and you start acting, and it's basically what you – did you ever have a day job, so to speak, or has it just been straight on through?
My job that I did while I was playing small parts and, you know, getting my feet wet was I played piano for a living at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel.
Really?
And I did that for 2.5 years. And before that, I had done various less – regular jobs like playing for brunches and playing one
but
night
you
a week.
But you were just the person in the lobby creating the ambiance.
Exactly.
Like they have at really nice department stores.
That's exactly right.
Wow,
people
what a
would
gig.
Come up and make requests, and I'd do my best to play whatever they asked for. I had these huge fake books, which are just basically the melodies and the chords, and then you go from there.
Is now I used to. We were sort of – our trajectories sort of are simpatico because
– this ought to be good.
I was cleaning – I used to clean the carpets over at the Beverly Wilshire.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I remember – it's why I love going to Wolfgang Puck's place, Cut, over there, because there used to be a little diner called like the Pink Turtle. And then there was a Grand Trinon room or something on the other side and the something. But anyway, they tore out the little diner and they tore out some other rooms and they made this big restaurant out of it, which now cut. But that used to be back in the day, back in the Pretty Woman days, back when it was configured, because I think that was the hotel.
That was around the time. I mean, I was there a little bit after Pretty Woman, but – the lobby lounge was where they had the big fancy desserts. Mm-hmm. It was a restaurant, but it was also a lounge. And because I was a minor, I mean, I was 16 when I started there.
Yeah.
They did serve alcohol, but because it was called a lounge and not a bar, I was allowed to play there. There was a bar at the other end of the hotel that was called a bar, and I was not allowed to play there.
I always hated the fact that the Beverly Hills Hotel, the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, and the Beverly Hilton – we're all within like 7 blocks of each other. It's so fucking easy to go to the wrong one. Yep. I've done it a million times. They go, where are the upfronts? They're at the Beverly Hilton. And I just go to the Beverly Wilshire or the
off
Beverly
Wilshire?
Whatever.
The one off Santa Monica there?
They're all fucking off of Wilshire.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're playing the piano.
At 16, was that unusual to be playing piano in a hotel at that age?
For me, everything was – I mean, I know now how unusual everything about my childhood was, but at the time it seemed like the most normal thing in the world. So, and of course at 16 you feel so much more grown up. I think everyone does. So I didn't think, I'm too young to be doing this or anything. I just wanted to be able to pay my rent. And
a lot of weird foreign dudes coming on to you constantly?
All the time.
Yeah.
They always thought I was older than I was.
No, not many redheads where they're from.
No. Mm-hmm.
A lot of Sultan guys swinging by.
Yes, that's exactly right.
My room is 100 feet above your piano. Come on, let's show you.
George Burns came in once, though.
Oh, really?
He was very cool. I played Young at Heart for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he tried to pick up on you, too?
He didn't.
No.
At least I don't think he did. Mm-hmm. If he did, I was unaware.
Well, must have seen a lot of luminaries sort of passing through there, because that was kind of the place. I mean, when people, actors would be put up and people would come into town and do all that kind of stuff. That was one of the few places.
Yeah. There were quite a few people that came through. One who came in all the time, I think she was actually living at the hotel and it was the last few years of her life. Do you know who the actress Beatrice Straight was?
She
was
from?
She was in Network.
Oh.
And she won an Oscar, and she was famous for having won the Oscar. I think she was only in two scenes or three scenes, but
In Network.
In Network.
Right.
But Beatrice Straight would sit at the end of my piano and came in about twice a week and would just sit there and applaud. She was very sweet.
Why is there something exceedingly sad about the last years in a nice hotel, even if it means you have more money than anyone else you know?
Like, 'cause it seems so anonymous somehow.
But there's a kind of a power move to it as well, like, staying like full-time residency at a hotel like that means you got a lot of fucking money socked away. And it also means you're kind of choosing to do it. Like, you could stay almost – you could certainly buy a condo down Wilshire if you could afford to stay at the Beverly Wilshire every night. But there's something very sad about it and lonely about it. But why is it so sad and lonely? Maybe you're fucking your brains out upstairs and you're having a ton of fun down at the bar and sitting with Alicia listening
to
her play her piano.
Fucking her brains out upstairs, having a ton of fun?
I think she was probably not. I'm going to go with no on that one.
All right. I'd like to think she was. But that's me.
But maybe. I hope that she was.
You know what? It seems like if you live in a hotel, even though you might know the people that work there, you never really have a community. Is that why it's sad? Because people are always coming and going, but you're not?
I guess. But I mean, when I lived in apartments, the only people I ever knew in the apartments is that's the fucking asshole who lives downstairs, and that's the cunt who never stops calling the fucking cops.
Leave the garbage just outside the garbage.
Yeah, and that's the fucking dickhead who's always walking around the subterranean parking with fucking hands in his pockets in a circle. I don't know who the fuck he is.
Yeah, community.
That's community, yeah. And then you move into a house, and it's kind of the same thing, just a little further apart, but there's a lot of that. There's the old weird guy walks his dog at the wrong time. You know, that guy.
So, yeah, I always notice people by their dogs. I pay much more attention to the sound of the dog's bark and what the dog's habits are going to be and how many times they walk them and that kind of thing. I'm in an apartment type situation.
Yeah, I don't know what percentage now that dogs are allowed in airplanes.
Yes.
Then can apartments say we don't take pets anymore?
I don't think they can.
No, if it's a service dog, they can't legally say that.
And so everybody for $52 can go online and make their dog into a service dog?
You have to not say this out loud because then everybody's going to do it and they're going to change the
maybe
law.
It's already on.
I haven't done it yet.
So don't do it.
Oh, darn.
Just be amongst the
honest
individuals.
Few.
Dignity. No price can be put upon dignity.
I knew there was a reason why I hadn't done it yet. I'll probably not do it now.
Quiet dignity. All right. Why don't you get the news queued up?
And that was Alicia Witt back in 2014 on the Adam Carolla Show. Really fun guest. And yeah, once again, another great episode. And now we're going to roughly pass the halfway point with Carolla Show number 1748. This is 2 years later, April of 2016, and we had Michael McKeon on.
Exactly. It's Michael McKeon, Dr. Bruce, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop for this episode. Gina Grad is now a year and 4 months into her role as newsgirl. It's Adam Carolla Show 1748. It's a little clip of everything from the episode. You get a little Michael, you get a little Dr. Bruce, you get some of Gina's news, a little bit of a supercut. Check it out.
Hold on a second. Frank over here, 42 from Massachusetts. Frank?
How you doing, Adam?
Good. So you've heard me. You're here to give us some other movies that got 2 stars on cable that drive me insane.
On my cable system, and I think you'd be proud to be associated with these movies.
Okay, I will say this. It started, and people tweet me this because they aggravate me, but it started with they were rerunning my movie, The Hammer, on Showtime or Stars or whatever, and on one place, now, according to Rotten Tomatoes, it's 80% with the critics, 81% with the top critics, and 89% with the audience, the last I checked.
Right.
Stars had it at like 2.5 out of 4. Mm. Stars or Cinemax or whatever it was had 2.5, and I was like, just if you give it 3, it's 75%, which is still below the grade, but you're at 2.5, and then some at some point it got 3 stars, but that was out of 5 stars.
And I thought, got your third star?
I thought, hey, assholes, it's your fucking network.
Yeah.
You're selling this at a premium to the public. You're supposed to be blowing some hot air up the tukai of your movies, and this movie's very well received, very well regarded, but all you have to do is go to a place that aggregates reviews called Rotten Tomatoes, and just look it up, and it'll be...
The work's done for you.
2,000 people have weighed in, and they've given it an 89, so that's 3.5 stars, or whatever it is, 4 out of 5, or do it, and then go ahead and up it 10%, because it's your network, but why are we winding down?
Yes, it seems
we're rounding down on it.
Self-defeating.
Yes,
I agree.
So, drives me insane. So, give me 10 other movies that... only got 2 stars that I like that I'm going to feel better about because The Hammer only got 2 stars.
Okay, here we go. First Blood.
The first one.
Yep.
That's a good movie.
And wow,
that's a
good movie.
And First Blood Part 2.
Okay. But yes, the first one for sure.
Everyone
really
agrees it's a solid movie.
Very solid. All right.
Yes.
All right.
St. Elmo's Fire.
I get why it's 2 stars, even though it's a tool tune of movie.
They're well put.
Yes.
Old School.
Oh, stop it. That's a great movie.
Why they do?
I agree.
2 out of 4 stars.
Blue, you're my boy!
I'll also say this. In a world where what? Every comedy's hilarious? Like, how many comedies are even bring a smile or part chuckle to your face?
Yeah, right. This was laughs throughout.
Yeah, why would you just give it 50%? All right, good.
Rounders.
Good movie.
Yeah, good movie. That's ridiculous.
I like it. Rocky IV.
Oh,
I understand that.
Brian, come on.
I do. I love it, but I understand the 2 out of 4.
My personal favorite of the Rockies. I mean, it's a little,
it's enjoyable. I like it.
Yeah, I understand that when you put a 4 after any movie... Even if it's Godfather, it's not going to be critically well received.
That's a good point. Top Gun.
What?
I understand it, but I disagree.
Huh. I disagree as well.
Now, my final three, you're going to, like you said before, you're going to understand it, but I just think you'll really appreciate these. We got Con Air.
Again, understand.
Generous. This is generous.
That's a good movie.
Yep.
Point Break.
Oh, yeah.
You're in good company.
Mm-hmm.
And Armageddon.
Oh, man. Yeah, I must say.
Should have been top 5 list.
critics are fucking snobs when it comes to big movies because they don't realize. First off, a big movie is like a circus that's 5 times the size of, it's much easier to make a small movie than it is to make a big movie. And I don't mean it's going to be better or whatever, but there's pyrotechnics going off. There's all kinds. There's F-18s flying through the air.
Oh, physically easier. I mean, easier like to get it over. Like the expectations are lower. It's going to fly under the radar.
I just mean it's physically easier. It's a bigger.
Yeah.
It's just
an undertaking for a lot of
bigger
things.
It's a massive undertaking, and somehow they deduct points for that. Like, Armageddon – or whatever movies we're talking about, they are what they are. There's room for those. You don't have to – just because Michael Bay directs doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's big.
Tell me about it.
All right. Thanks, Frank. I feel better now, especially with Old School in there.
Old School's great.
All right. Michael McKean's waiting out there. Let's do one more here, Bruce.
Lead poisoning? Would you like to discuss
that? Yeah, I want to hear what's going on with lead poisoning.
Lead poisoning, there's not a solution in sight. The problem with lead poisoning – there is not a treatment for it. Once you're exposed and your lead levels are high, especially under 6 years old, learning difficulties and growth retardation. Now, if I get somebody in the ER that has acute lead poisoning, you do chelation therapy where you put a chemical in their blood that sucks up the lead. So what they did, this is really the only treatment to get out of the body. They took kids and they put them in a group that got this chelation and in a placebo group. And there's no difference in terms of learning and growth problems from the lead.
And
so there's no treatment.
Is
so
this based out of Flint, Michigan? Or specific?
No. This is known.
All right, because this is
in the literature,
a big problem over there.
It's a big problem over there. And the problem is all the lawsuits, all the people, and all
well,
the
hold
horrible
on.
For the families and the kids.
I just read a report by Dr. Justin Furman. And... he said if you bang a Tijuana whore, that will leach the lead from your body.
It makes sense.
Via your honker.
I want to believe it.
I'd be willing to debate that, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so lead poisoning. And BPA, I know I don't get much more time, but the BPAs in your plastics, the BPA-free, they're finding their problems with that. So
Adam Carolla fans,
everything in glass. Throw out all your plastics. And that plastic bottle, Adam.
Look, I've been fucking saying this for a kajillion years, that all the hydrating we're doing with the water bottle that's sitting on the dashboard of the car, is it smells like plastic, and we're doing much more harm than we are.
Think of it, though. You're right. All those plastic bottles, people that drink six of those a day, think all the...
And like I said, the stuff's clear, and it sits out in the backseat of your car, and the car is 118 degrees inside.
Yeah. We're in trouble.
Well, and you know, I think you brought this up one time because I honestly never even thought of it. I thought, well, I don't do that. I would never drink a bottle that's sitting in the backseat of my car. But I don't know where it was sitting before it got to the grocery store. I don't know if it was sitting outside once it got to the grocery store. You get it. You think that's its genesis, but it's not.
Well, here's what I'm. Here's where we're living. I pay a premium to have a bottle of plastic bottles of water trucked into my house because nobody in my house, well, except for me, is going to allow the kids or the dog to drink from the municipal water that comes from the sink, except for that's not packed in plastic and trucked across the United States. But there's no amount of discussion
that's not on the table
that I can have with my wife or anyone else about why the tap water is absolutely fine and why the bottled water may actually be causing more harm than good. All right, so what do I know? I'll just keep paying for it. Bruce, you done?
I'm never done, but I'll be back.
Put it this way. You may not be done, but you're finished.
Hey, where's my Ace Award? I thought you were going to present it to me.
I
wasn't even notified.
That you won an Ace Award?
Now that I made it through my segment, I can complain a little.
Yeah, your Ace Award is like...
It's out there. It says Joe Coyne.
Yeah. It says nothing on it. That's all right.
It doesn't... I mean, you won an Ace Award for being thrown out of here. So it's like saying, like, I know a guy.
Bill Buckner's like, I was one of the top moments in baseball history. Where's my award?
No, my buddy Daniel has the record or had the record for being the fastest to be submitted in a wrestling competition.
You don't want that trophy.
In high school, like he tapped out in 3 seconds or something like that. And while true, he still is the recipient of that honor.
Yes, he
it's
still
not
is on the
much
plaque.
Of an honor.
Yes, it is. Because you know what that should translate to? I have the highest capacity to irritate you.
Probably.
Yeah. Have any guest?
Mm.
Almost anyone.
Maybe. Okay.
Excluding...
I'll tell you what I'm not irritated about. Podcast One, man. They're doing a little survey, and they need your tweets and your comments, so keep sending them. It's easy. Take a couple of minutes, and you give us a hand over at Podcast One, and we try to make the show, these shows, all the shows on Podcast One, the best we can make them. So go to Podcast One and take the survey. It's free. It's easy, and it just sort of helps the good of the team. That's Podcast One. Take survey real quick and let us know what you want. Podcast One. All right, Bruce, that's it for you.
Thank you.
Good. Michael McKeon is out there. I just want to mop up one more call and then we'll take a break. We'll bring Michael in. Kelly.
Hi.
Hey, 34, New York. What's going on?
Yep, that's me. I just found out, I guess, via social media that my 22-year-old unmarried unemployed cousin is pregnant, and my family, who's very family oriented, I'm originally from Ohio, is all like super excited about it. And my husband and I, I'm 34, we've been together for 10 years. We were waiting to become very successful before we tried to have a baby, and we're trying to have a baby. And I just don't feel like anyone in my family or, you know, even society now is honoring that, you know, commitment to bring a baby into a better place in the world and not just like, oh, well, here's another cousin for you.
Yeah. Like, well, because we've stopped judging, and all the politicians are cowardly pussies who'll never talk about the biggest problem this country has, the only problem this country or any country has, which is this problem. They won't do it. They instead talk around the problem, which is we need better schools, we need better infrastructure. We're not going to have a school to prison pipeline. We're going to have a cradle to college pipeline. All the stuff you would not need if we had responsible parents who raised their children. It's a super simple equation. I have two kids. No one ever has to worry about my two kids. Not because they're special kids, not because they're magical kids. Because they have a dad, and because they have a mom, and because dad works hard, and mom takes care of the kids and works hard, and we raise two little good citizens. I used to use an example, by the way, Dr. Drew's kids. He had triplets. Do we ever need to worry about a world with Dr. Drew's triplets roaming around, untethered in this world? No, because Drew was a great dad. Drew started saving money for these kids' college the second the umbilical cord was cut and the schmegma was wiped from their eyes. No. That's right. That's what he did. He started putting money away.
He deposited that into the account.
That's right. So we do not have to worry about that, or me, or Drew, or anybody.
But isn't this like the dumbing down of American participation trophies? There's no behavior that's wrong. Oh, it's wonderful. You've had a
Well, first thing we need is a dad and a mom and a couple of ducats to rub together and a decent job and whatever else. And then we can start having kids. Now, we start doing that, we're living in a utopia. We keep blaming the fucking school systems. We've got nothing. We're sliding off a fucking cliff. Yes, we should be judging your ne'er-do-well cousin for shitting out a kid without having a job and not being married. Doesn't make them a bad person. Good, but we shouldn't applaud it. And all the pussy coward politicians should step up and say something. Every single topic is discussed. Everything. Big banking, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Wall Street, climate change, where we go, alternative fuels, everything, but the one thing that would actually make a dent in everything, which would be people not shitting out kids who were fatherless and destitute. Yeah. But I'm just some radical racist guy who's uneducated and does have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yes, and there's still a problem.
I told the Huffington Post, how about education and family? And I was explained in a condescending tone. It's a lot more complicated than that.
I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to want you for his vice presidential running mate.
Well, I would do Bernie Sanders a favor.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I would say, Bernie, you understand. All right, Bernie, let's at least agree on this. You would love to sodomize the American taxpayer, right?
Well, of course. It's part of my platform.
Okay. So you want to pull his pants down and enter him from behind, yes?
Have you been reading my stump speech?
Okay. Now listen to me. I, too, would like to provide as many ample a-holes for you to sodomize as humanly possible.
This is a symbiotic relationship.
But here's the problem, Bernie.
What's that?
You want to rape who? The
taxpayers.
We need taxpayers so you can rape them. Because
your rape
pool is turning into a fucking above-ground mini pool for the kids.
Oh, no. I want Olympic-sized rape pool.
We need a huge
with lanes.
Aquifer of folks for you to rape.
Of course.
I want that, too.
I'm glad we see eye to eye on this issue.
This is why I want you to start talking about family and education so that we can have new generations.
Right.
In my mind, there are a bunch of unborn rape victims right now that you're going to put your dick in.
This is a glass half full look of the world, my friend.
Right. But if the families break up, if they drop out of the eighth grade,
the pool
if
dries
they start
up.
Getting caught up in gangs and running and in prison, how can you rape?
Yes.
Well, no, there hold, you go. Let me
get, of course you can rape a guy in prison.
Yeah.
Metaphorically, what I'm saying, physically you can rape him in prison. No problema.
Right, we're talking
but
about the taxpayer.
How are you
going to
rape their wallets if they're in prison? And as a matter of fact, they rape us because
we pay
$60,000 a
year. Yes. Yeah. So let's have as many little rape victims as possible. Yes?
Yes.
Put that on your button.
Do you need a job writing speeches? Yes or no, right now.
All right. Dr. Spaz is out of there. Michael McKeon is rolling his eyes and coming in studio next. Michael McKeon here. Better Call Saul, the name of the show.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
What can't Michael McKeon do? I'm a huge fan.
Fly. He cannot fly.
Or
produce children.
Enjoy almost everything. Oh, I'll just say everything he does. Season 2, by the way, February 15th, premieres AMC, 10 o'clock. Maybe you can help us out a little on this one. I got a call from Bob Odenkirk about 3 months, maybe it was about 6 months ago.
Okay.
And he said, hey, I hear you got this Paul Newman documentary. And we got a guy's coming in this season, and he's a big race guy, and I just want to get him a copy of it. And his name is Ray. And I said, can you tell me any more about the guy? And he said, no. His name is Ray, and he's doing a guest arc or something. Does that sound familiar? I don't want to out the guy. I know people watch.
No. Well, listen, there's a lot that goes on in that show that I'm not party to. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm ensconced in my little, aluminum foil world
right.
for the most part. And this season I do come out a little bit more. But, a lot goes on that I don't know.
I was watching a documentary, Brian. I don't know if you saw it. And
probably
anyone saw it. They've been running. I think it's called "Drunk, High, Dead."
I watched it. I
National
watched it two
Lampoon.
Nights ago.
Lampoon. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And I was very. I found it very fascinating.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's very interesting, and especially if you like comedy and sort of the origins of comedy. And mm-hmm. there were some folks there, obviously, that you've worked with.
Yeah.
But where did you start, and how did you start, and who'd you come up with?
Well, I think a lot of it goes back to my first year in college many, many years ago. I met David Lander, who was later my partner on Laverne and Shirley. But in the interim, he and I were very close friends. And in the early 70s, I became part of a group called The Credibility Gap, which was right. Harry Shearer, mm-hmm. David Lander, and Richard Beebe, the late Richard Beebe. And we did satire on the radio. It was – get a news story – rip it off the ticker tape.
Is this pre-Lampoon Radio Hour?
Yeah. It's right around the same – a little before. This was 1970. They actually started – the Credibility Gap started in 68, and then they eventually amassed the
And this is out of where?
It was out of Los Angeles. The first station was KRLA.
Wow.
Which was at the time – it was an AM station. It was at the time at a hotel in Pasadena. Yeah. Weird.
And from there you go where?
Well, we took that act kind of when we kept getting fired from the radio stations. And so we kind of took that to the stage and we started working on the stage, opening for rock acts and stuff. It was the four of us and then later the three of us. And we opened for John Denver and for Commando Cody and Richie Havens. And it was just – it was a strange world. Because a lot of those audiences, they didn't care to see a lot of sophisticated satire. And sometimes they threw things to let us know that they didn't want it. So,
yeah. let's see. Richie Havens, famous for Here Comes the Sun cover, mm-hmm. I'd say. Yeah. Beatles.
And also Albert Brooks opened for him once and did a very funny piece on, I think, Albert's first album about opening for Richie Havens and how that wasn't his finest hour.
Did you – oh, Albert Brooks opened for
– for Richie, yeah.
How could anybody open – I mean, I get it if you're a rock band and you have right. a lesser-known rock band open for you. But if you're a place that serves fondue and the opening act is going to be Thai food or churros or something, mm-hmm. it's probably going to not work real well with that crowd.
Absolutely right.
And I've every person I talked to, who I remember having a long conversation with a guy who was in a improv troupe called the Frayed Knots, and he had to go to the coach house and open for Pat Travers. And he'd be like, we need a location. Your mom's cunt! And it's like, okay. An activity. trying to get out! Uh-huh. It's like,
right.
Because Pat Travers...
I'm going to ask for a relationship, nobody, but I think I know where we're going to go with this.
Nobody wants to see that. It's weird, right?
That's such a strange world. It really is. The only if there's a music act, no matter what the music act is, something that is even just nominally a music act opening for them makes sense,
right?
But it's not always great sense.
No,
you know, I used to live right near the Fillmore East in New York during when that was a thing, and you would see some very peculiar pairings. I saw Tiny Tim open for the Doors.
Wow.
Now at the time, Tiny Tim hadn't been on TV or anything. He was just kind of New York's Dirty Little Secret.
Right.
But he was a hilarious act. But a lot of people just kind of got up in arms and they just, what are you doing to us? Where's Jim Morrison?
So you, I mean, now you can just, there's so many outlets for what you do.
You meant in my home.
There's so many.
A
lot of GFI ones. Mm-hmm. You'd put the ground fault interrupt.
And man,
put
that
near water source.
USB has changed my life, man. That's just. That's,
and then there's 240. We can get the quick charge going on the Tesla.
That's what I'm saying.
There's so many outlets. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is back in the day, there was all this talent. You know, we've had Fred Willard was in here not too long ago. And you'd see all these guys back in the day, even Bill Murray and all the guys, the Gilda Radners and all these.
Right.
But they had to find a place to go.
Right.
Because there was no YouTube and there's no Funny or Die and there's no Comedy Central and there's no anything. There's pretty much Saturday Night Live and that didn't even exist.
75 like, then they started.
Yeah, and nobody was really a stand-up. Mm. And stand-up was sort of the gig, but yeah. Everyone else did improvisational group theater, parody, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
And so there was no – they couldn't really do stand-up, yeah. So it was well, all were, these
orphans. They were local. They were local. San Francisco had the committee.
Right.
Chicago had Second City, obviously, and still do. And there was Second City in Toronto. L.A. had a
Groundlings.
Group Groundlings. But before the Groundlings, there was the Premise, which was
Away in the Frayed Knots.
Yeah.
Were killed at the Coach House in 1979. tragically, but before that, they were one of the premier improv comedy
in
troops
their pre-Pat
in LA.
Travers days. Yeah. Yes, of course.
Before Pat Travers said, boom, boom, out go your lights. That was his one hit.
Yeah.
So were you able to make a living? I mean, I know Laverne and Shirley came around and there was a paycheck, but before that, again, not a stand-up, no SNL, no Funny or Die, like hard to make a living back then?
Yeah, it really was. The credibility gap, we did these gigs and everything, but they didn't pay much. So we also did commercials for various things. We did a commercial for a local Toyota dealership, Jack Poet Toyota. We did a couple of those. We did one for Head Shampoo, which doesn't even exist anymore.
This is for the Emergent Shoulder Shampoo? Yeah.
I know. We were all head-oriented. And a lot of them for Atlantic Records. We had a friend over at Atlantic Records who was in the – and he gave us these spots. And, you know, we kept it alive, kept it going.
Do you feel – and maybe don't let me put words in your mouth, but – you guys were in it for the love of the game because there wasn't a lot of game. There was just the love of collaboration. I mean, I remember those days at the Groundlings and Acme Theater and stuff where you would just collaborate. You did it just because that's what you did.
Right.
But there was never any end game. Like, we're going to shoot this thing. We're going to get a bunch of viral downloads. We're going to get it up on YouTube. Like, it was just, you just did it. And now I wonder, there's so many people that are in it, but I'm not sure if they're in it for the reasons you were in it, because you weren't being paid initially.
Not so much. We were in it to end the Vietnam War, and it worked. As you noticed, in 75 was all done.
Right.
That was because of us.
Nice job.
Satire. Wow. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well done.
We don't get the recognition I think we deserve. But no, it's true. We weren't an improvisational group. Credibility gap, we would write. But, for example, the day that Nixon resigned in 74, we had a sketch on its feet that night at what is now the Improv. At the time it was called the Pitchell Players, which it was at the interim between the Ash Grove and the Improv.
So did you grow up out here?
No. I was already grown up when I came here. I grew up in back east in Long Island and New York City.
And one of my favorite movies of all time, Spinal Tap, where did that come from, or where were you when you or Harry or whoever thought about it?
Well, this was in the late 70s. Rob Reiner had a pilot. He and his partner, Phil Mishkin, and some other actually, Phil was just kind of peripherally involved. But Rob sold this pilot. He had just left All in the Family. And he sold a pilot, or he was going to make a pilot. And the premise was it's a guy sitting there at home with his remote just going through a day of television. That way you could parody everything that's on TV. And it was called The TV Show. And the last sketch, or the next to last sketch in the piece, was remember Midnight Special with Wolfman Jack?
Yeah.
Well, it was that.
There was
basically
a bunch of those shows that would just come on Friday night or Saturday night, and they'd play acts. They'd have Love and Spoonful come in there or whoever, and sometimes they'd do it live, sometimes they'd lip sync or whatever. It was
usually live, actually, and. If you get Paul Schaefer on here to talk about that stuff, because he's one of those guys who remembers everything he ever saw or heard and can, repeat it. It's amazing. But anyway, we had the sketch, this idea, and I wasn't involved with the writing of the show, but Harry was a producer on the show. Chris Guest was a writer on the show. And Chris and I had always done these characters, and they said, well, how about those guys? We'll put a band together. The original band was myself, Harry, Chris, Loudon Wainwright on keyboards, and Russ Kunkel on the drums.
Really?
Unseen was great bass player.
Call Schaefer.
Schaefer in here. Yeah. Sklar, Lee Sklar, a great bass player. He actually did all the real bass playing because Harry was just kind of picking up the bass at the time. And we did this kind of, you know, psychedelic, you know, performance and video.
Did Spinal Tap have to steep for a while in terms of the appreciation of the audience? Because I remember, what year did it come out?
1984.
And I remember in my little circle, people were like, you got to see this. But that was in my little circle of those guys who are into that stuff.
Yeah.
But when it initially came out, it was...
It baffled a lot of people.
It was more appreciated two decades later or a decade later.
The critics, we were on more 10 best lists than anybody that year because critics really loved the film because they knew it was about movies.
Right.
In a certain sense. It was a documentary. It was a fake documentary about the way people make real documentaries. And they just loved that kind of, you know, double thump. But a lot of people just didn't get it. When we previewed the film, when we showed it to preview audiences, they were really in the dark because, I mean, they
were like, who's this band?
Yeah, they kind of thought they recognized Meathead from All in the Family, but what the hell is he doing there? Why didn't they make him? We got these cards, you know, we showed it in San Francisco and in Dallas or someplace, or Austin or someplace. And the cards were amazing. The cards were like, why didn't you make a movie about a good band? Why does the camera move around like that? Who are these people? And there's a blank on preview cards that says, in what way is this movie like other movies you have enjoyed? And how would you recommend this to your friends? Blah, blah, blah. So on that line, some person had written DOA. Excuse me, DNA. Mm-hmm. We said, DNA? DNA does not apply.
Wow.
How much do I like this movie? Does not apply. Didn't like it.
Well, it is. So. It's one of the movies I never once. If I ever stumble into it, I never switch it off because there's always the next scene of Artie Fufkin needing you to kick
in
the ass.
Have you fallen into the 7-hour Godfather hole now?
I watched four hours of it.
Screwed. I mean, it's like, I'll just watch until. Oh, my
the next
God.
Scene. Yeah. Yeah. That's a new scene. No, that's a new scene.
Amazing. Yeah, it's just amazing.
We won't rest until we never stop resting.
That's exactly it.
The creative, I mean, with all the shows and all everyone, I mean, it's like, you know, you go right from Breaking Bad to Better Call Saul. So everyone's like, have you seen all the Breaking? You got to sit down. What you need to do is ignore your children, ignore your job,
Take
and ignore your
weekend.
Faith, and just lock yourself in a room with some Kleenex and watch all. And then there's Better Call Saul. And it's like, everyone's doing this binge watching and stuff, but they were probably not building as many bridges and skyscrapers. Like,
it's true. If we think about it, a lot fewer bridges have gone up.
The guys who built the Golden Gate Bridge did not binge watch Better Call Saul.
That's right.
So it's weird, but it's like there used to be this. I mean, you know, I don't know. Bruce Springsteen had a song 12 years ago.
57 channels and nothing on. Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now
57, he must have got the basic package.
Now it's 574 and everything's on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just not enough. And then you have to get in these arguments where people are like, are you watching this Making of a Murder thing? No, I'm not. You need.
Yeah.
What do you binge watch? I just watched 77 hours of The Godfather. Well, knock it off.
Put that aside.
My dog died of exposure. The kids are emaciated. They've been left out of school. But now you better watch this.
Well, I do like the fact that Better Call Saul is a weekly show. And you wait a year and you can binge it. You can, you know, or if you're overseas, you can watch on Netflix like now-ish. But I like the idea that we're on every week for 10 weeks.
Is the plan or is there a plan for you coming up in terms of more theatrical stuff, more comedy, more serious roles?
I never plan, you know. I think that life gives us too many interesting corners to go around. And you really never know what's around that corner. Right now, I'm writing a film with my daughter. It's an idea I had a long time ago, and it's finally someone in the family who likes to work. So,
the rest are binge watching.
She and I, she gets after me. Let's work. Let's go. Sit down. Go. And we've been having a great time doing that. And, you know, I'm going to go off to New York. My wife is doing a show at the Public called Southern Comfort, which she's been kind of workshopping for 5 years or so. And so that's going to be kind of exciting. I'll be her fancy man. Won't be working, but I'll be dining out.
Do you like, or has it attributed, I mean, you don't seem burnt out on the business. And I guess it's, you don't seem burnt out because you've been doing 1,000 different things for a long period of time. Is that the way you like it? Because I feel like when you've done that same gig kind of thing,
yeah,
there's a burnout factor.
Well, I go back and forth between TV, mainly TV, and theatrical. And I've been working on, you know, the last 10, 11 years, I've been doing a lot of work in New York and elsewhere, in London, Chicago, and, you know, Williamstown, New York, and Williamstown, Massachusetts, and, you know, really interesting places, and L.A. So I get a chance to be a stage actor, too. And that's something – that's what I assumed I would always be doing. When I was a kid and wanted to be an actor, I assumed I would just live at my parents' house and get on the Long Island Railroad and go in and do a show in New York and then come on back, you know. And we all grow up. But still, I love doing that as much as I love doing anything else. I love working on TV. I love this gig with Odenkirk and Vince and Peter and that bunch and Jonathan Banks and Ray Seahorn. It's just Michael Mando. It's just a great bunch of people.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's such an incredible show, and it's so funny, but not overly so, you know, in that way. And that character of yours, Chuck McGill, is one of the weirdest, most fascinating characters, I think, in any TV show, because he's a lawyer with, like, an allergy to electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're probably not going to tell us, but does that get resolved either way in the upcoming season?
No, I think they're really approaching it very realistically. If a guy is cut off from the world that he saw himself as an important part, I'm sure there's at least one conjunction missing from that setup. But he wants to get back into it. He's trying to climb back into it. That's all I'll really tell you about that.
Can't wait.
But,
and too many outlets, by the way, as we spoke to
way
earlier,
too many outlets,
when you're allergic to electricity.
And that was Michael McKeon and a little bit of Dr. Bruce, too, on the Adam Carolla Show. And, of course, we've introduced Gina Grad, who is our current news girl, into the fold. Now let's move forward to April of 2017 when we hit that nice, clean episode 2000 of The Adam Carolla Show, where Mike Lynch and Rich Banks worked tirelessly for what I personally think is the greatest custom Dick Banks song for The Adam Carolla Show ever made.
It's hard to beat. It's got so many references. It blows even my mind that somebody was able to come up with all these. Adam Carolla Show, episode 2000, featuring the Try Guys. And this portion of the episode is just the world premiere of the song He's Done 2000 podcast from Rich Banks. And Adam and company react to the hilarity. Check it out.
There's electricity in the air today.
Yeah, man. That's why my hair's a mess. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Congratulations, everyone.
I want to say this. Things in life creep along.
Oh, we're getting heavy.
And they happen very gradually. And the very gradual part is the part that makes it difficult to wrap your mind around or understand.
Yeah.
The person who you see on a daily basis, who loses 80 pounds, that's understandable but never jarring.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same person you haven't seen since last year, and then you see them. Like, oh, my God, the weight.
Yeah, what happened?
What happened? It's amazing. Oh, great. It just elicits a different response because it's all at once versus the very slow, I've lost 4 pounds a week for the last 17 weeks, mm-hmm. and now here we are. So that never really gets any response because sometimes it gets looking good or whatever, mm-hmm. but it doesn't
Change
really
your hair?
Get, not from the day in and day out. Because those people see every day, mm-hmm. hard to tell. And it's a human thing. What we've been able to do here and come to a place and come to a studio, I had to, as I was floating around in my freezing cold pool the other day and looking at Philly Cheesesteak, who does this great move, which is he gets on the he gets on the side of the pool and looks down at me like, hey, I'm not fucking nuts. I'm not going in there. Like, I have a 3 IQ, but I'm still not going in there. But he's all jowl when he looks down at me. You don't get that POV of your dog that often, or hopefully if you do, you've used plenty of water-soluble lube that'll come off in the pool. But that dog just looking down, his jowls start surrounding his eye sockets, which is funny when the jowls spill up into the eyes, and he just looks at me, and he does this weird move where he takes one paw and he just puts it out. Not really, he's not sure what he's getting out of it. He's not sure what he's doing. Are we high-fiving? Is he trying to pull me in? Like, I don't have anything he needs. Yeah. He just does a thing with his paw.
Is there a little bit of like, is he okay? Should I check him for to make sure he's moving?
I wish. There's not.
Okay.
That but I was just floating in my freezing cold pool, and I was thinking to myself, you know, you've been able to carve out a life where you have a warehouse, where you've built a studio in your warehouse, you've surrounded yourself with people you want to work with, and you get to go in there every day, and that's your job. And I was thinking, that is insane. That's an insane notion. I mean, look, it's insane enough that you're able to get a job on Spike TV or you get a job on whatever radio station or whatever that is. But the idea that you just get to go to that warehouse you bought to put a couple of cars in back in the day and go sit in your studio and talk into your microphone as a job is pretty outrageous. Now, it's been done incrementally and for so long that it doesn't feel like it would feel if I was just in high school or swinging a hammer or whatever it was my former life was. If I just woke up here, it'd be like, oh, my God, this is insane. And it's important, I think, for everybody to sort of see if you can dunk yourself in the freezing, frigid waters of life every once in a while and think, wait a minute, here I am. Look at this. I mean, it's so easy to, with the kids and the schedule and everything, to have everything just kind of pass you by. We're at the, you know, we're capable as humans of marveling at, you know, you took me, take me and TiVo or DVR. I went from, wait a minute, you can't stop TV. You can't pause a live show.
I'm not a god.
I'm not a warlock. That's alchemy. Well, you can't do this stuff. How do you do it to Jesus Christ? I recorded the goddamn playoff game, but didn't do the spillover.
The thing ran 17 minutes.
I didn't see the fourth quarter. I didn't see the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. Now I'm ripped yet.
Yep.
That's what we're able to do as human beings.
You're right.
From the, oh my God, I could have traded a 5-year-old DVR to Elvis for his house in 1975.
Yep. Possibly two of them.
Possibly two of us. Yes. And a couple of his lady friends. But now I'm yelling at mine because it wasn't smart enough, or I wasn't smart enough to hit the extend and record the rest of the fourth quarter of the football game. So that's where we're at. And I am going to tell you right now that I do appreciate this, that I do think about this, that I realize that it can't be done without you guys, and it can't be done without the sharing. I took Philly cheesesteak for a walk on Friday night when everybody was somewhere other than home, and I just called the guy, Matt, from Chicago, who had lost his dad and his sister in the plane crash.
It was nice.
And we had a nice chat. And he's 24. And my God, I mean, you know, talking to him about his tool room, and him and his dad had his tool room, and they had the tool room in the basement. And I was asking what he had. And he did this part where he said, we have a bandsaw. There's a bandsaw, but I have to put it together. It's still in the box kind of thing. And I sort of realized, oh, he got that while his dad was around and they had planned on putting it together and using it. But we had a very nice conversation.
Well, it meant a lot to him that you called.
Well, it meant a lot to me because I sang our fans. He said, oh, we saw you in Chicago and we saw you doing stand-up and we saw you doing a live podcast. And I took my dad took me, whatever it is. That's why we're here. And we never lose sight of that. So I want to thank all of you for listening for all these years and being a part of these 2,000 episodes. So I appreciate it. And now we'll move forward with our 2000th episode. Let's see. We got our Rich Banks song, Gary. Mm-hmm. Brian has it.
I do.
All right.
I have not heard it.
I have not either.
Let's check it out.
Let's give it a listen.
This could be the beginning of something great, or it could be a painful, humiliating 20 minutes. Let me tell you about, first off, I got to say this, I'm nervous. I don't know why, but I've never done this before.
Jimmy Kimmel, Pets on Plane, Adam's Magic, Crystal Brain, Backup Beepers, Brian's Cancer, Lazy Hippie Mom. Seth MacFarlane, Gavin Newsom, Asshole Patton, Troller, Sue and Brian, Cranston, Brian Bishop, both spelled with a Y. Ken Burns, Achatine, No Red Turns, Jay Moore, the Deaf Right Guy, Brian Cranston does gay eye, No More Showers, Hygiene, he pissed off the Philippines, Alec Baldwin reeled, Hoffer Darkness, right, goodbye. He's the 2000 podcast, and you keep complaining, anger never waning. He's the 2000 podcast, and you keep on going, cause it's hard, he's blowing. Overpower makes you sick. 50 years we'll all be chicks. Max of Bad, a half Targaryen jerking on a flight. Fitz Dog, Dr. Spaz, Richard Martin, NY Jazz, Larry Miller's Road Trips, Occupy Wall Street. K Rock, Road Hard, Newman's got a winning dot. Fonda Lear is dropping turds. Holland Williams doing birds. Strasser, we can rage. Podcast on a cruise ship. Endless Rant, IPA, Tournament of Roses. He's a 2000 podcast.
Comprehensive.
Wow.
Give me 10 more verses.
Tebow Game, Artie Lang, August looks like Katie Lang, Rich Banks, Gina's Tits, who the fuck sells the shit? Garrett Ghost, Dr. Drew, David Wild, Bald Jew, Lackey stole his microbrew, Elliot Gould interview.
Oh my God.
Sonny Bono, Yoko, Beastie Boys, Holland Notes, Buell, Hauser, Mike Rowe, Mayo, Vio, Retardo, Dawson, President B, made a peanut allergies, retards at the HuffPo, Kevin Smith's an asshole. He's the 2000 podcast.
Lord.
Wow.
And you keep complaining, anger never waning. He's the 2000 podcast. And you keep on going, cause it's hard, he's blowing. Albert Brooks has best guest, Lynette kicked off Southwest, Molly, Philly, Big Mama got it all. Sunny and Natalia, not Taco Bell, material. Olga, cheap calls, chain smoking baby doll. No beer in first class, Dagas, Teddy, Pendergrass, DFT, not JV. What else do you want from me? He's the 2000 podcast, and you keep complaining.
I hope it goes another hour.
Yeah, me too.
He's the 2000 podcast, and you keep on going, cause his heart is blowing.
Sure.
Bungalow Sue, definitely not a Jew. Rich man, poor man, Bollywood, Kalen. Taxes, fair share, Jeff Ross, Rose Eisen, and the Goalpost. Guinness record from Gervais, Celebrity Apprentice. Made a movie, favorite tweets, red bracelet for eating beets. Do his best, not your best, window of negligence. He sold out Seattle's more, Mangria's in your liquor store. What can he complain about? Mom is chanting freak out. He's a 2000 podcast.
Yeah, Rich Banks with, I'm guessing, an assist from Mike Lynch.
That is their opus.
That was amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
We should play that on stage in Fresno.
Oh,
yeah,
people would love that.
Yeah.
That bears repeated listening. There's a lot. I need to unpack that song.
Yeah.
And that was Rich Banks debuting the He's Done 2000 podcast songs. Now, Rich has been doing songs for the Corolla Show for many years. He does obviously the Rotten Tomatoes intro songs. Pretty much any song, any custom song, Rich will do, and he's so good at it. He produces all of it from his own house, and whenever we need a song, we just email him lyric ideas and what song we want to use, and He just runs with it, and he's so quick.
If anybody has a sexually embarrassing story, they're going to get a song written about them.
Very true. And as we've visited many times in Banks Bracket Madness last year, when that was our big March Madness game.
Soon we will recap that, which will be an extreme challenge to do so, but we will do it eventually.
Yeah, that's a ton of fun. It just shows you how good Rich is with all.
Because you even left things off the brackets, which of course annoyed many of the people at home who keep their own spreadsheets.
Right, that's very true. I didn't do the seeding, I'll be honest, but and I remember it was fan voted for the rest of it, and there were some
upsets. I heard Kalen did the seeding.
Some bracket busters. I can't neither confirm or deny that. Okay, let's get going with our final clip of the day. This is episode 2004. And it features Judd Apatow.
Beloved guest of the show, Hall of Famer, comes on all the time. Nobody gives the politics caveat. It's just Judd Apatow just comes on the show. And he seems to see who Adam really is as a person. And we don't have to deal with any of the, yeah, buts. It's just, yeah, no, I come on the show. Adam's great. And Judd's great. Adam Carolla Show 2004, February 2017. Gina Grant, Brian Bishop. Check it out.
For you, I think of you as sort of like the custodian of comedy.
Like cleaning up behind others.
In the circus of life.
Getting out the wood chips for the vomit.
No, what I'm saying is like the guy who is more interested in comedy, like, mm-hmm. like, I guess I'll put it to you this way. Some guys like driving race cars, but they don't have an interest in cars.
Yes.
I've met a million race car drivers where it's like they want to get paid, they want to get laid, mm-hmm. and they want to drive. But as far as when they're done, like you go, hey, I like cars. So I'm like, what's the displacement of the motor? And they're like, I don't know. Ask the mechanic. You know, they don't know. They don't care. They just want to go drive.
That's how I am about the camera. I don't know what the lenses do.
Right.
I need someone to explain it to me.
But then there are guys who want to drive, but they also want the cars, and they want to know all about the cars and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And even may enjoy restoring a car even more than driving the car, whatever it is. And your case, I feel like you're the comedy version of that. You want to appreciate what it is, the history of it, that you're like the custodian of it. And as far as driving, like, yeah, get up and do some stand-up, get in front of the camera, but it's mostly about the preservation, the restoration, the creation.
Well, I'm a hoarder, so it's all of it. You know, I like to express myself. I love the challenge of trying to be a funny writer or director. I love the challenge of trying to be funny doing stand-up because it's so hard to achieve true greatness, you know, to get to the level of the guys that we know or the women that we know who are the very best. And I like that. I like having a high bar that's going to keep me busy for a while trying to get to it. But I also can watch somebody like Maria Bamford and just sit there with my jaw on the floor amazed at how smart and funny and weird she is. And I've been like that since I was a kid. I used to sit and watch Mike Douglas, and I'd watch someone like Michael Keaton, who was a comic in the beginning.
Right.
And I would just track him like he was an athlete. Like, oh my God, he's got a pilot with Jim Belushi called Working Stiffs. I hope it's good. And then I would just track him through his whole life. And I just have always loved those characters. That's what's been fun about doing stand-up again, because I felt like I did stand-up for 7 years and I had drifted from the tribe, and it's good to be back.
Well, it's always been in you. And I know I was listening to you over the Christmas break, being interviewed on Howard Stern, and you were talking about your family and a divorce and your dad, and then you doing the kind of stuff that probably should have been a tell in terms of what you were going to be doing. And I'm curious how your family responded. They have all these things, which is, well, if your young kid is torturing animals, he's probably going to be a serial killer. Like, and you go, it's not like, oh my God, he hates squirrels.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this is a global thing. It's not, if he only hated squirrels when he was in his 40s, we'd be okay.
Yes.
It'd be a little bit of a problem with him and his wife, probably.
When they go on walks?
Go on walks or go to the park and a squirrel happened by and he'd go tearing after it. But, this is a global problem, but this is an indicator
yes.
of something that is a bigger thing. And, you know, you recording Saturday Night Live and on a cassette and then like transcribing it, that is an indicator. That's your torturing of squirrels.
Exactly. Well, you're Bill Hader said he used to do that too. I mean, he's young, but when I was a kid, you know, there was no VCRs that recorded. And so that was the reason why you had to audio record it, because there was no way to save it. Because also back then, I didn't understand how reruns worked. So if Steve Martin was on Saturday Night Live, there was a part of me that thought, oh, I'll never see this again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it felt very precious.
You had to capture it.
Now we know everything's out there, so people don't even bother to do anything. They're like, yeah, I can catch up.
I'll see it online.
But back then it was scary, and it felt so important to me. And I didn't know how it worked. How does a sketch work? Why is this funny? Why is this not funny? I wanted to like write it out so I could figure it out.
I was a big SNL nerd at the same time. Yeah. Did you have the same thought as me, naively as a kid? Yeah. Like, oh, they just go out there and they kind of make it all up. I mean, they kind of know what they're going to do, but they, you know, they go out there and they ad-lib it all.
Well, there was a Saturday Night Live book when I was a kid, and it had all the scripts in it and photos and behind the scenes. And I think in my head, I thought that would be the coolest place to work, to be, to have those be your friends.
Did so, like, yeah, I could remember trying to record like Dr. Demento on a Sunday night, hearing young Weird Al do
I interviewed
my Bologna.
Dr. Demento.
Oh, you did?
That's how nerdy I was. I took that another step. I took a train alone to Poughkeepsie at 16 years old and interviewed Dr. Demento and Weird Al.
Was that?
Wow.
Was that, now, see, I'd hear him out here syndicated in Southern California, so I had no idea where he was. And my simple mind, he was always just here.
Yes.
Because that's where my radio was.
Yeah.
But he was back east, Poughkeepsie.
Well, they were touring.
Oh, they were touring. And so maybe he wasn't planted back east.
And Al just did a benefit with us the other night at Largo at the Coronet, and he did a medley with his band. It was so freaking hysterical. He came out and he didn't tell me what he was going to do, and I didn't know, you know, because it's a benefit, he's going to do one song. He does this like a 7-11 minute medley of every great song, and you just realize, oh, I've been watching this guy since I was 15 years old, and it made us all so happy. It was like when James Taylor was in Funny People. We all started crying when he performed his scene in the movie. He performed like Fire and Rain or something.
Right.
And you forget, oh, I've never been around when James Taylor wasn't around. Like, it just hit you in some emotional place. That's how I felt about Weird Al. It made me want to cry on some level.
So for you, do the parents, and they should, just like they should recognize the torturing the squirrel thing at age 12, do your parents see what you're doing, recording, transcribing, SNL, going out, then wanting to get interviews with everybody? Do they recognize that and go, hey, this kid is going to be doing this one day?
Oh, yeah, because my grandmother's best friend was this female comedian named Toadie Fields.
Oh, Toadie Fields.
And Toadie Fields, for people who
don't
know
Toadie Fields?
Don't know.
Toadie was a name. I mean, Toadie made the...
And a profession.
Toadie... Toadie Fields was a, you know, heavy set-ish, I think, woman, comedian that was like not your top, like you knew household name, but if you were around in the 70s.
Oh, so I don't know what era this would have been.
She made
60s,
it through.
70s.
Yeah, okay. And she'd be on the, you'd see her on like Match Game and stuff like that. She was one of those celebrity comedians, Toadie Fields.
And
right.
She would be on that show with Burt Convy with the couples.
Yes.
I forgot what that show was called, where you would like they'd hide one half of the couple and ask questions. And so my grandmother would take me to go see her.
She died in 78 at age 48, so says Garrett. Yeah.
She had diabetes and she had to have her leg amputated. And I went to see her at Westbury Music Fair. She has one leg. She comes out, place gives her a standing ovation. She's insanely funny and talking about having one leg. And I think on some level I just thought, oh, there's a place for me in the world. If this one-legged woman is so beloved and hysterical and genius, this is a pretty good job. You know, because I felt like a weird one-legged person. You know, I felt different. And I thought, oh, she's so beautiful. And, you know, she's like a slightly chubby woman. You know, her act was very much about, like, being overweight. If you look at this picture we're looking at now, she's not really that overweight. It was just, you know, the terrible definitions of beauty that made her have to do jokes about being overweight. And she was awesome. She was really incredible.
Yeah, also, there's a new fat sheriff in town, and it's all of us.
Yes.
Which is, I just walked through an Indian casino outside of Sacramento, and I saw people, women, that were massive and young. That was like the scary part, like 23-year-old chicks that were 300, but just big. Mm-hmm. I mean, not, and I have always said, like, and yes, the Toady Fields to a young Adam Carolla is like, oh, she's that fat lady comedian. She's not fat. She's
looks
got a couple,
13 pounds overweight.
Right, right. But think about the Three Stooges. Like Curly was the fat,
one.
Curly was 192 pounds, a shorter, thicker guy.
I was just watching the Blues Brothers the other day, and Belushi was like the fat guy, and nowadays he's marginally overweight by today's standards.
I'm Belushi weight most of the time.
Marginally.
I was having this revelation, which is when I was a kid, if you went to the supermarket or the mall or what have you, and there was a fat woman or fat guy, and they were making their way up and down the aisle, you'd go call your sister or your friend or whatever and go, you got to check out the big dude. Look aisle five, look in the frozen foods. You see him, and it'd be like the novelty of like, oh, he's a big fat man or she's a big fat woman. Then I found myself walking through an airport, like in Chicago, and a chick slid in front of me, and she worked at the airport, and she was a big, big person. And I found myself going like, oh my God, look, like I was back in junior high or something.
You grabbed a random kid.
And then another, hey, you.
Hey, look at this.
Hold on, Pops, I'm trying to torture this squirrel. Put that down. Follow me. And I was like showing, and I was like going, oh my God, look at this. And then another chick slid in equally as large. And then I looked around and realized everyone is huge.
You were the weirdo.
You know
and
why?
That's
because
where we're at
it
now.
Sucks to eat healthy.
It does.
It just sucks. I mean, I so love to eat. I think about it all day long. I know when I was a kid, I must have been very, I don't know if I was lonely or frustrated, but how I dealt with it was we had a grill in the center island of my kitchen.
Wow.
And I would make hamburgers every day. Every day I'd make these like double cheeseburgers, or I'd make grilled cheese sandwiches and eat Entenmann's cake with it. And it made me so happy. And to this day, it's pure joy eating food. There's no downside other than my death. I love it, and
I can't
eat enough. I love being so stuffed that the blood goes to my belly and I almost pass out. Like, that's my version of, like, people who have to be choked while they have sex. Mm. It's just the pass-out moment of eating. So I have such compassion for people who can't control it because I can't control it, and I haven't had much sugar in the last month. And I think that life is not worth living. Like, it has been so hard to get rid of it.
Can I?
His safe word is check, please.
Can I posit this thought here? Because it's the one thing. It's the thing. Like, you go, like, hey, one day you'll be rich. You'll be able to drive a cool car. You'll live in a cool house. You'll be able to go to cool parties. You'll be able to do this, and you'll get the best of this and the best of that and everything else. But the one thing it doesn't buy is your ass still gets fat when you eat that In-N-Out burger, and you want that In-N-Out burger every bit as bad as you've always wanted it. And it's like the one thing that when I grew up poor, I grew up hungry, and I then transitioned into a life where I was poor and hungry. Like, it was just always, you know, epic battles when I was 26. Like, who's been eating my cereal? Like, which 9 roommates have gotten into my flakes? Come on!
Fess
I
up.
Had a mark on this thing, and the date, and now it's down 3 inches, and it's like big battles about who ate whose cereal.
And cheap food is the food that makes you fatter.
Mm. Yeah, but you couldn't get fat back then because I was a carpenter and boxing instructor. And I was hungry all the time. So I was like poor all the time. So it's like I'd leave the house. You didn't leave with all your snacks and all your water and all your everything. Just go climb on a roof, swing a hammer for 8 hours, and then come home again and look for some bottom ramen because the top ramen was a little rich for my blood. But we didn't. It wasn't an issue. It was always like, where's? And then every once in a while, we had a rich friend. Her name was Janie, and she belonged to the Encino Country Club. And about three or four times a year, she'd be like, they have a Sunday buffet with a guy who makes omelets and a guy who makes waffles and another guy who makes pancakes.
I'm there in my mind right now. And
there's a station just for omelets.
There's a station just for omelets. Well, how's that work? You got to go there and blow the guy? No, no. You just tell him what you want, your omelet.
Just walk past the waffle station.
Where's he get the stuff? It's already there. So he's got the scallions and the tomatoes and he's got the ham. It's all there. And it's like, oh my God. And boy, you'd have it on the calendar. Like, we're going this Sunday. Yeah. We're going Sunday. And we'd show up and it'd be like, oh my God, you get the plate? What direction? What direction do we go? Don't use two plates. That's a rookie move.
And they don't fill up on the wrong stuff. Yeah. You have to pace. Yep.
Oh my God.
Don't eat too much bread because you need room for the wings.
Yeah, right. So it'd be like, you'd strategizing and like, you'd go, all right, but I got it. And then Janie would say, you can go back. You can eat. Yeah. What do we do with the plate? They take the plate. You get a new plate.
They give you a new one.
Oh, my God.
Can I tell you the funniest sketch that I saw? It was years ago. I think it was like when Reed just did, you know, the morning show. I don't know if this was from another show, but Howie Mandel went to a buffet in Vegas. And this is such a simple prank joke, but so perfect. He pretended to be one of the cooks at a buffet in Vegas, and all the joke was that when people were filling up their plates, he would tell them they were taking too much and make them put some of it back. And people lost their minds. He's like, no, that's too much chicken. You're not going to eat all that. And he would take it off their plate, and they would just scream at him.
It's so simple. The best comedy premise is just the super simple comedy premise. And that's very basic. When I used to do Ask Mr. Hardware for the Man Show, where I'd just go to the hardware store and sort of confront people and ask them what they're up to. The one thing that always worked is I'd just find a guy and I'd go, what is that? And he'd go, it's a cordless drill. And I'd go, it's a little too much tool for you. I think we should put that back and maybe just get you like a 4-in-1 screwdriver. Yeah. And it would work every day. They'd go nuts. Like, what are you talking about? How dare you? Like, and it's weird. Like, I think it's a weird shame thing mixed with they're not going to pull it off.
And people are afraid to speak up. There was one with Harry Mandel, and it was very simple, which was he's like the guy at the parking valet, and all the drivers are clearly like stunt drivers, and they had fake cars. So as you're like waiting, right when you drop off your car, the car in front of you pulls away, and they have like stunt guys fishtailing and doing crazy stuff. So you don't know if you should leave your car,
right?
Because what they've done is so dangerous, and everyone still left their car.
Oh yeah,
but they're afraid to say no. Here's the funny thing I find about Trump is that he eats a lot of fast food, which I always think means that someone who's not thinking long term. He doesn't exercise. He's our first president who doesn't have any exercise regimen at all.
I think about that every once in a while. I'm angry and jealous, though. Like, do the guys go like, no. I mean, it's like that sort of Fonzie thing. It's like, I just got boots. I don't have tennis shoes. And you go like, but what are you running? They go, I don't. And then you go, what do you, it's like some sort of old school thing.
Yeah, because Bush would bike and, you know, I don't know if Obama ran or he played a lot of
golf.
Basketball.
I think
and
he,
stuff.
Yeah, I played some hoops.
But I do nothing and eating the Taco Bell. We've just never had a president so out of shape.
Well, back to the world we're living in, you said with people getting fatter not being a thing anymore, it's like we have a president who's objectively overweight. He's fat. He's an obese man by any standard, and yet it's never discussed. It's never a joke.
And the
job ages the
healthy. Like, everyone in that job ages so fast.
Yeah.
But I always wonder if there's something in his psyche, you know, because he's in this, like, he's in a zone that I don't think anyone else is in. Like, he lives in his own bubble, that he may not feel any stress.
I don't think he feels. I think you're right.
It's interesting.
I got to tell you, the couple encounters I had with him, one when I was doing the marriage ref, right? The Seinfeld show.
He was on an episode. Papa.
Yeah, it was on with me and Gloria Estefan.
Perfect trio right there.
That's right.
I'm on YouTube right now looking.
I remember thinking.
The new checks and balances.
I remember thinking, I better bring the funny because I'm not sure if Trump and Gloria are gonna pull this off. But he just walked up to me. He's like, hey, Adam. And I was like, hey, Don. And he's like, this is going to be the best episode ever. This will be the best. And then he paused and he went, it's going to be the most highly rated. You check. Yeah. You check tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's going to be the most highly rated episode they've ever aired. And I was like, I don't know how to check. I'd be scared to check. I'd never think to check. How do you know? And yes. By the way, based on me, that's a zero. Mm-hmm. Then we got Gloria Estefan, you know, 3.5. And then there's you. Like, what are we basing this, this rating spike on? And then he walked. But for that moment, I felt good.
Sure, like
when
you're on the team.
He slapped me on the back and said, this is going to be the highest rating episode. You wait, you see, you check. And I was like, felt good. I think a lot, it's like.
That's his number one appeal.
Well, he's like Tom Vu, the real estate guy.
Yeah. You're too scared, Whitey. Like, you round eyes, too scared. You want bitches on a boat? You can't have. You can't have bitches on a boat. See these cars?
Because at the end of the campaign, I was watching one Trump speech.
Tom Vu's the best.
He was a real estate guy with infomercials for people.
I come here, coffee can from Vietnam. I clean dishes for 20 years. Now, look at me. Huge home, Florida. Bitches dripping from walls.
Yes. Because he was excellent. In one of his last speeches, he literally started saying things that were very infomercial. Like, he was saying to a huge crowd of thousands, all of your dreams are going to come true. And, you know, there's a lot of people in our country whose dreams are not going to come true. I mean, we all go for our dreams. And it's a very weird thing to sell to people, but he's really into metrics. You know, he's into how many people were at the inauguration, how many people watched the marriage ref, how many people watched The Apprentice, what are the polls? And as the polls don't service the idea in his head, it does lead him to a meltdown when people say, oh, he's the most unpopular person who is now the president that's ever been. I don't know how he handles it because it is about the marriage ref thing. And I feel like people who are into those numbers, on some level, he's really not taking a moment to go, there's a kid about to have heart surgery waiting in Syria to get here who has a green card. And I've kept her out because it's about this larger number, like 3.2 million people watch the marriage ref.
I have no idea how it rated. I have a theory about that.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting because Trump is very much into what happened to, you know, the Celebrity Apprentice and the marriage ref and who's number one and who's got the most and numbers. Also, by the way, what he does, that move where he's like slaps you on the back and goes, this thing's going to be number one, I guarantee it, check tomorrow. It's a basic version of what every old black guy did at every boxing gym I used to go to, which he calls everyone champ.
Everyone's champ,
yeah. And you just walk in and you go, hey, champ, how you doing? Yeah. And
I love when people call me chief.
Yeah.
If anyone calls me chief, if I'm just like anywhere and something like, what can I get you, chief? I literally light up.
I love it too. I love champ. I love chief. Now, the thing that's crazy is, of course, I'm not a champion. None of those people are champions.
Nor a chief.
Nor a chief. But either way, feels good. Yep. Yeah. And you get a lot of mileage because people go like, hey, about that guy? I like that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he assaulted his wife. I don't care. Mm-hmm. He seems like a good guy. He calls me champ.
Oh, someone calls me boss.
Oh, boss is nice.
Boss is nice. Yeah, it's fascinating.
My theory with Trump, but I don't know this. Mm-hmm. My theory that he has with his unpopular polling in terms of him as a president, I wonder if he does this thing where he goes, well, of course, if you tell kids to do their homework and get vaccinated, you're not going to get a very high score from those kids.
Yes.
This is me as a sort of dad of the nation, mm-hmm. giving some tough love yeah. to these people. Of course, they're not going to like.
Of course, they're not
going to
want to hear.
We don't want to hear. That means it's
effective. Years of coddling.
That sure. means that's how you get stuff done.
Yes.
Like I don't know. Was Patton? Was he popular with his yeah. troops or no? Or did he get the job yeah. done? I think he might go there.
Yeah.
In his head.
Sure.
To sleep at night.
I think he has two sides. One side is a casino owner. So his whole thing is like patting everyone on the back going, you're going to win tonight. And he, mm-hmm. but the other side is I'm happy to take all of your money and I'm in the other room trying to figure out how to make sure you don't have any money when you leave here. But I think that here's the thing I find most fascinating. I think he really thinks he's going to fix every single thing in the country. I think he really believes.
I believe that
piece
too.
By piece, I'm going to fix everything. But he's like a short-sighted person in the same way he doesn't really care about the environment or his own health. Mm. He doesn't have a long-term view. So he says to the Senate, switch the rule from 60 senators needed to approve a Supreme Court justice to 50 so we can get our guy through. He's not the guy who says, but yeah, but if I lose in 4 years, the Democrats now have that rule. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, there's no time horizon oh, yeah. for choices.
No, I think he's going Toadie Fields. You know, the leg was gone. It's time to do some comedy. Yeah. We're not going to be here forever.
It's going to be a Bullworth situation is what you're saying.
Yes, and I think that he's kind of doing I'm going to eat junk food, not going to work out. And by the way, you know, if somebody said to you, look, you know, got hold of you when you're 30 and said, here's the deal. You can eat junk food for the rest of your life. You never have to work out ever again. You're going to be the president, and you can bang Euro models, but you die at 74. I probably would have taken that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good 74 years.
So the other version is I marry a shrew, and we die yeah. together in our 80s, and yeah. I'm miserable eating kale. Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead.
Sure.
I'm check the first box.
Well, I always say my thing is I don't fear disease or death from eating. I fear eating perfectly my entire life and then getting hit by a bus and living long enough to know I could have eaten yes. all of it.
Mm. Yeah. I always thought about that. You never want to die on the way home from the yeah. gym.
Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? Let's get to getting, man. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Save that 15%, and you should be with Geico anyway. You'd be saving already. And then the 15 on top of that at geico.com.
That's Judd Apatow back in 2017 making his rare in-studio appearances. Usually we have to go out to him because, I mean, he's a busy man. And we pay no mind because we just like having him on. He's a living legend.
At the ACS, we'll take him how we can get him.
That's completely right. And I always said he's the reason Adam made Road Hard. I think he was the spark that ignited Adam wanting to make another movie.
Funniest boner joke in all of cinema.
I agree. All right, that'll do it for Cruella Classics. We'll be back tomorrow with some more clips for you. And we'll see you there. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.